Good morning, everyone. My name is Beth Guggenberger. Yeah, thanks. I was literally wrapped up in that song. I forgot it was my time to get up here. For those of you who I haven't met yet, my name is Beth, and I have been a part of the Horizon community for more than 20 years, and it's you have very special music here. I just need you all to know that. Well, I'm happy to join the Real Thinking series, this idea of taking control of my actions and my reactions and thinking about why do I act and react in those ways? And how can thinking reflectively about that give me perspective on my everyday life? If you haven't been with us, we've been talking about when my switch gets flipped, why does that what comes out? And when Chad was starting to unpack the series for me, the first thing I thought of is a story of that came from a time frame when my husband and I were foster parents to teenage girls. We did that for about 10 years, which let me just tell you, I got a lot of material from that season. And in that season, I was parenting a foster daughter who was 15 at the time of the story I'm going to tell you. She'd been in my home several years, and I don't know if you've ever parented a child like this, but she was harder than all the rest of my household combined. And what I remember most about when we kind of escalated to a crisis was that she was pushing buttons that was not bringing out the best in me, and I was clearly pushing some buttons that wasn't bringing out the best in her. And finally, after using every tool and tip I knew how to use, I cried out for help. And I was living in Mexico as a missionary at the time. We were there for about 15 years. And I asked an expert from Texas to come down to my house, Dr. Kyle Miller. And I said, listen, stay with us for a couple of days. Watch every interaction. Challenge me any way you want to. Look in any closet. I don't care. I need help, and I know I need help. And he was watching and listening and taking all kinds of notes. And on the last morning he was there, she walked out of her room in a miniskirt that was not appropriate for school. And I made sure she knew that. And I said, you can't go to school like that. You got to go home. You got to go back in your room and change. So she walked into her room and put on a pair of jeans and the tiniest tank top you've ever seen and came out making a point in all kinds of ways to me. And I said, you cannot go to school like that. You have to go back in your room and change. We did that several times. Finally, she came out in an outfit that I bought her, and I thought she looked amazing in it. And I said, you have yourself a great day. That looks amazing. And she walked out of my house, and I said to Kyle, hey, guess what? She won, and she knows she won. Because underneath that outfit is exactly what she wants to wear. And as soon as she's out the door and around the corner and catching that bus, she's taking out the outer layer and wearing what she'd like to school. And what is even worse is she knows that I know that she knows that she won. And he just sat down and drew me a picture on a napkin. I brought a prettier version of what he drew me on the napkin, but I'll never forget that moment. He just started to draw a picture of a tree. And at the top of the tree where the leaves were, he just wrote the words attitude and actions. He said, Beth, I've been listening to you for 3 days, and my notebook is full of things you've been talking to her that are around her attitude and actions. You've been talking to her about chores and curfews and homework and cell phone and boys. And he went through his list, and I said, yeah, that's right. That's what I'm talking to her about. And he's like, her attitude and actions come directly from her understanding of herself, her self-image. She didn't walk out of here in a miniskirt to offend you. It actually has nothing to do with you, but somebody told her that's where her worth is. Her choices are directly result of how she sees herself. And the way that we see ourselves are directly related to the root system in our life, the lies and the truths and the things that have been planted there that impact the way we see ourselves and then come out in our attitude and actions. He's like, listen, all you're trying to do is cut off the top of the tree, trim back some of those branches. Do you know anything about horticulture? When you trim back a tree, it comes back twice as strong. And I said, can I get a witness? Yes, that has been my story. And he said, I have a prescription for you if you're up for it. And I said, yes. And he said, I want you to spend the next 100 days, 90 days. And I don't want you to talk to her at all about any of her attitude and actions unless she's going to hurt herself or somebody else. And I want you to spend all the time talking to her about the things that you know for sure are true. Let's seed that garden, that root system in her life with true things. And I just want to confess to you, it was a whole lot harder than I ever thought it would be. I mean, the week after he left, she came home to tell and complain to us about how lame our spring break plans were. And let me just tell you, everything in me wanted to say, defend myself and say, hey, guess what? The reason we're not going anywhere is because you're a ward of the state and I can't even cross state lines with you. Otherwise, I'd be at a beach somewhere next week, you know, but That would have done nothing for our relationship. That would have been very shaming. So I didn't say that. A couple of weeks later, she came home with one of those homework assignments that most students had been working on for, you know, the better part of a month or two. And it was all due the next day, and she hadn't started yet, and she was freaking out. And you know what I wanted to say to her? I wanted to say something along the lines like, how long have you known about this? But again, that wouldn't have done very much to help her. And so I had been practicing, because I had been running out of true things to say to her. So I had been going in the morning to my Bible. We're going to study this morning the book of Proverbs, which is a book of wisdom. It has true things in it that we can count on as wise and trustworthy and good. And I was going to my Bible in the morning and memorizing some true things and then just working it into sentences, even if it's not even the appropriate application of it. And she was telling me about her homework assignment, and this isn't even what it means in Colossians 1, but I said, listen, he is before all things, and in him all things will hold together. Let's get started on your homework. And here's what I want to testify to you, is that with a steady diet of me being careful about not just looking at the top of her tree, but realizing I became her mom really because I wanted to talk to her about the things and the realities of what was in her root system. Who had lied to her in her life? What did she believe? What was her identity? What did she know? Did she understand now where she comes from and what is to be trusted? And I can tell you, it's not a formula per se, but about day 90 into those 100 days, she and I experienced real breakthrough. And I think it's because the things that I was saying that were true were coming from our Bible, and our Bible tells us in more than one place, it's sweet to the taste like honey. And all of a sudden, I noticed when I was walking into the room, she wasn't repelled by me, but she was drawn to me. And she was drawn to me because honey tastes good. And in this series, we're going to talk about what's coming out of our mouths. And is it repelling the people around us, or is it drawing them in? Is it coming from the things that I have trusted and believe are true? Or are they coming from lies that somewhere along the line I absorbed as if it was true? And now when I get my flip switched, I'm playing the wrong kind of real. We're talking in this series about the wise man and the foolish man, which we're calling the king and the jester. And the king wants to understand what's in my root system. I want to be ever more wise, ever more trustworthy, ever more good. The jester doesn't care. They're just believing that's who I am. I'm just an anxious person. If that's what comes out of me, that's because I'm just anxious, or I'm just an angry person, and that's what happens to me when I get my flip switched. I'm just an angry person. This series is about that root level work, and I promise you, it's worth it. In my work at Back to Back, so we're an orphan and vulnerable child organization, and we're based here out of Cincinnati, and we do a lot of work in the area of trauma, which means we're always studying the brain. And the brain, I want to just quickly teach you two parts of your brain. If any of you, this is your area of expertise, sorry for how simple I'm about to make it sound. But the front of our brains is where our prefrontal cortex is. This is where all the good thinking happens, problem solving, cause and effect, critical thinking. We want to be functioning out of our prefrontal cortex. But right behind our ears, we have these two almond-shaped glands that are called our amygdala. And that's where our fight and flight and freeze. And now there's a fourth one called fawn. That's where that is housed. And our prefrontal cortex and our amygdalas cannot work at the same time, and the amygdala will win every time. Just as an example, I was driving down 71, maybe hypothetically I was speeding. And I had a couple people in my car, and I was following my GPS somewhere, and we had the radio playing, and I was in a conversation, and I was buzzing down 71 southbound towards the city, and I saw all of a sudden the patrol car pull out and the lights go on, and I realized I had been caught. And so what's the first thing that I did? I went to turn down the radio, which doesn't make any sense. I should be hitting the brake is what I should be doing. But, you know, you turn down the radio, you suddenly can't do a bunch of things at one time. Like, I had to get my amygdala, my fight, flight, or freeze got activated, and I went straight back there to that spot. And then as I slowed down and made everybody stop talking, and I turned my radio down, and I hyper-focused on what was happening, he he actually passed me because he was going after somebody else. So that's the good news of that story. But once I realized the threat was over, then I went back up into my prefrontal cortex where I was now problem solving how to get where I was going and re-engaging the conversation. And the best thinking has happened. And if you have had a healthy childhood or you've done some really good healing, then you can go back and forth between your amygdala and your prefrontal cortex as quick as that. But if you haven't done some healing, if you have had some trauma in your history, once your amygdala gets activated, it stays that way, and it's pretty hard to get back up there and do the right thinking. So it's really important to understand what reactions happen. What do I do when I'm afraid? What does it look like? And how can I make sure that I look more like the king and less like that jester, using the best parts of my brain? Because if the jester gets activated in me and I get afraid, science tells us that some of the protective strategies we might use are things like manipulation to get what we want, triangulation, violence, aggression, control. If you find that's what your real looks like, it could be because you're actually afraid. We've got to learn about what is it that's causing this situation, this conversation, this circumstance to activate that in me. But here's one really good piece of news. God made our brains to heal. He made our hearts to heal. He is totally capable of pulling those lies out of the root system of our gardens. There's something called neuroplasticity. And here's the other fun thing about our brains and the way they were designed to heal. Two of the fastest ways to help us heal are very easy. It's the full attention of an attuned listener and space to play. When we play, dopamine and serotonin and all the good stuff comes out of our brains and begins to calm us down so that we can then think before we speak, so that we can rationalize, is this something that would be helpful to this conversation? Or is this action going to serve me, or is it going to hurt me? And the full attention of an attuned listener, I mean, this is a pro hack, parents and grandparents. If you're thinking, I don't know what to even do with this kid right now, if all you did today is listen to them undistracted and play with them, you are actively participating in their healing. And if we know connection is where healing happens, then suddenly every interaction we have is an opportunity for healing. Well, we're going to learn about this kind of wisdom in the book of Proverbs. We're going to study this morning the 15th chapter, and we're going to get started in the 15th verse of Proverbs 15. It says, all of the days of the afflicted are evil, but he who is of a merry heart has a continual feast. And a merry heart is more than just somebody who has the cup half full versus half empty. This is not a personality thing. We certainly know people who have very good-natured dispositions, but that's not what this Bible wisdom is talking about. A merry heart doesn't always mean that you're like happy, happy, but it does mean that you have a sense of contentment. And that contentment brings fullness or abundance to your life. That's something Jesus will talk about later in John 10:10, where he says he brought us life so that we would have it to the full. And if you find yourself in a moment where you're not having a continuous feast, that your heart is not merry, one of the pro hacks, one of the fastest routes to contentment is to even take 60 seconds and stop and remember the things that you're grateful for. Even if it seems silly, like I'm grateful for air conditioning on a hot day. I'm grateful that my shoes are comfortable. I'm grateful for my Diet Coke. Eventually they can get more significant, like you can be grateful for your family and your health. But again, science tells us even the simple act of remembering what it is that we have, that gratitude, activates that merry heart in us. And when it says all the days of the afflicted are evil, listen, all the days are not always easy. I'm reminded of the fact that God promised his kids in the book of Exodus he was going to take them to someplace so magical. It's called the Promised Land. And when they got to the Promised Land, 70% of it was a desert. Like, all of our days are full of circumstances that we sometimes feel like we don't have any control of. But it's not necessarily that a merry heart is like everything's going exactly in the way that I want it to or that I plan for. It's not about how we manage our circumstances. It's how we give meaning to them. It's how that we recognize what our role is in the midst of it. I don't know if you guys have seen that Harvard Flourishing Program. It's a The Harvard Human Flourishing Study is a very long multi-university study that they've been working on for a while, and they're trying to ask the question, what does a human need to flourish, and how do we measure what flourishing looks like? Flourishing, by their definition, is pretty similar to what they're talking about here in Proverbs, this idea of a merry heart. It's a spirit of contentment, a recognition that everything that happens to me has meaning and that I have control over myself in the midst of a circumstance maybe that I don't like. How do we evaluate and make sense of our days? But flourishing is like, it might rain on a day when we were hoping for sunshine, or the diagnosis might not come back in the way that I was hoping for, or the house might not sell on the timetable that I wanted, but my heart, my mind is steadfast. What Proverbs is teaching us how to do is to anchor ourselves and to grow that root system of that tree down so deep it doesn't matter how the wind blows, we're going to be okay. And we're going to be okay because my sense of self is strong. I know who I am and I know how God sees me. And then my attitude and actions can come out and bless the people around me instead of bringing a reel to them, having a triggered reaction that hurts those that I love sometimes the most. Proverbs goes on to say in verse 16, better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure with trouble. And better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a fatted calf with hatred. Those words like trouble and hatred, those are jester words. Those are the words of the fool, always stirring up trouble, always picking sides and isolating himself from other people. But fear of the Lord and love, those are king words. Those are wise words. In 1 Corinthians chapter 13, later on in our Bibles, Paul will talk about what love is. Love is things like patient and kind and not self-seeking, and it doesn't keep a record of wrong, and it's the kind of thing that you are attracted to and want to be around. And what these two verses are measuring is, what's my appetite for healthy root systems? What's my appetite to have a merry heart? It's not a comparison about whether or not it's better to be rich or whether or not it's better to be poor. Proverbs isn't asking how much do you have. It's asking what has what you have cost you. I'm someone who travels a lot on airplanes, about 30 weeks a year. I'm down there at our airport. And so any of you who travel like that know that there's a game to be played at CVG. And if you travel enough, you get kind of good at the game. You figure out how to get fast passes into places and how to get into rooms where they have cheese cubes and hummus or, you know, whatever, all the lounges. And I was traveling with my one of my siblings who doesn't have to travel that way for work. And you know what? Kind of what you do with your adult siblings, sometimes you kind of flex a little bit. I think that's what the kids are calling it these days. You know, you kind of show off a little bit. So I was like, let me get you into this special room and let me get you into this special line. And I was flexing a little bit for him. And he looked at me in the middle of our boarding time and he said, this is really neat, Beth, but I can't stop but think like what this has cost you. And I think if he was writing a proverb, it would probably be something like, better is the worst seat in the back of the plane than the many nights you've had away from home. And he was right. In that moment, I was counting the wrong factor. And there is no continual feast when we have an appetite for the wrong thing. A person can have a lot and still possess less of the things that matter, right? Peace and integrity and relationships and fellowship with God. I don't know if you've been following the news at all and paying attention to someone named Ben Sasse. Do you know that name? He used to be a senator for the state of Nebraska. He's only 54 right now, so this was a little while ago. He was kind of a young, strong, articulate senator, regardless of your politics. He just was that kind of character. And then he left the Senate to go be the president of the University of Florida. So I don't know if there's any Gators here in the house today, but that was his next career move. And in December of this last year, he was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer and told he had less than 100 days to live. So he began to use this spring, he's been using some of the platforms that he's typically communicated on. 60 Minutes did a special on him and CNN, and I just watched recently something he did for the New York Times. And he's been talking about, he's still alive, he's taking an experimental drug that at best will extend his life another 6 months, but he still has a teenager and wants to be around as long as he can. And he's been talking about what it does to your priorities, what it does to your appetite, when you realize that you have your days are numbered. The Bible will tell us that we should number our days so that we can gain a heart of wisdom. We want to be the king. We don't want to be the jester. And as I'm listening to him talk about how he wishes that he could have had more family thickness, less devices at the dinner table, fewer nights in a hotel, and more in his home. As he's sharing about the things that he wished he would have done different and he's endeavoring to do with the days that he has left, I think about this jester and this king metaphor, and I want to live like a king. I want to live where I recognize it's better to live with the fear of the Lord. It's better to live with love than it is in any other way. The next verse says in verse 18, a wrathful man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger allays contention. All kinds of verses in our Bible that talk about being slow to speak. I think it's a really good idea. If any of you who've ever been married or raised a teenager, you know, like literally one word can change the whole course of a conversation. This idea of being slow to anger, we're an angrier country than we've ever been. In fact, Gallup has this study they did in 2014 where they asked Americans to rate how angry they were the previous day. And in 2014, about 18% of people said they were very angry the day before. But recently they repeated that study, and today we are at 22%. About a fifth of us yesterday were really angry. And I don't know what kind of reel plays in your mind when you get angry. I mean, sometimes it feels like it's all their fault, whoever it is. That's why you're angry. And that leads me on a path of judgment. There's not a continual feast or a merry heart down that road, I can promise you that. Or sometimes I'm angry and it's all my fault. And that is a path that's full of shame, and I promise you there's no continual feast or merry heart in that. So I don't know what is your relationship with anger, but in one of our trauma trainings we were studying about anger, and I was sitting in a training next to my husband, and Dr. David Schooler was giving us this study on the relationship between fear and anger. And he was saying that anger is a secondary emotion, sitting always on that primary emotion of fear, which basically means that every time we're angry, we're actually really afraid. We just don't know how to say the words. We just haven't figured out the language of it. And I remember thinking while he was teaching us about it that I had just lost one of my kids in the grocery store. I have 11 of them, so that's not, I mean, there's plenty more. Just kidding. I just lost one of my sons in the grocery store, and I don't take them all at the same time, I promise. But when I finally found Josh, he was in the produce. And I did not say, oh, buddy, pick out some bananas. I'm so happy to see you, right? I mean, I lost my mind when I got my hands on him. But I wasn't really angry. I was just scared. I was really scared. And that's the reel that can sometimes play when we get, when our amygdala gets activated and our root system has got some lies in it and somebody scares us, what can happen is we can have these big reactions. So anyway, when we're in this training, we learn about relationship between anger and fear. Sometime later that week, after dinner, we were doing the dishes, and my husband said to me, we were building a house in that season, and my husband said to me, he pulled out the house plans. He's like, I just wanted to let you know I let them today know that we want to put a bathroom next to that guest bedroom here on the first floor. And he pulls it out and points it to me. And I said, we don't need a bathroom in that bedroom. Do you know how many bathrooms this house has? If we have a guest who wants to go to the bathroom, then go here and here and here, and I'm pointing to the plans. But he actually wasn't asking me. He had already told them. And so I don't know if that ever happens in your household, but that actually triggered me a little bit more. So I'm starting to escalate a little bit about this bathroom, and I'm kind of going on and on, and I don't know how you fight with your significant other, but one minute I'm talking about a bathroom, and the next minute I'm talking about, like, his mother. You know how that goes, right? He's staying calm, and I am like the jester. I am escalating. And he finally says to me, hey, Beth, I'm thinking about that training that Dr. Schooler gave us this week and about anger and fear, and I can tell you're angry, but I cannot for the life of me figure out what's so scary about a bathroom. Can you help me out here? And let me tell you, in that moment, I did not feel like going, oh yes, let me think about it here for a second. Let me take a deep breath, and I'll be slow to anger. And like, I had adrenaline in me, and I was like, rawr. But I knew he was right. And there's something about that posture of curiosity. There's something about that attuned listener that really does heal you. And so I just closed my eyes and took a deep breath. I didn't really want to talk to him at that moment, but I was willing to do some self-reflection. And I realized pretty quickly what was wrong. And I opened my eyes and I said, I think I'm afraid we can't afford it. And he's like, that's what you're afraid of? And I said, yeah, that's what I'm afraid of. And he goes out of spreadsheets and shows me like it's just fine. And I was like, okay, then I'd like a double sink in there and some brush nickel. You know, like once I knew there was nothing to be afraid of, right? Then I calmed myself down. And this is the wisdom of the king. This is the, we have a tool. The Bible's teaching us literally how to be that curious one about the root system in each other's lives. If someone in your household, someone in your workplace, your neighbor comes in hot at you, if you can just have the self-control to be slow to anger so that you can literally allay contention, if you can be that person in that moment that goes, you know what, they're afraid of something, and instead of reacting and playing my reel, which could be manipulation, triangulation, violence, control, aggression, instead of matching their energy, what if I stay in a posture of curiosity and try to figure out what they're afraid of? Maybe I'll just be a listener, but maybe I have information that will actually alleviate what their fear is. If we're happy with the response of our reel, be grateful. If you're sitting there thinking, you know what, I am pretty slow to anger. I am someone who stays curious. I am comfortable with the way the attitude and actions look on my tree. I do have a healthy sense of myself. I do believe the things that are true and trustworthy, and I give those things away liberally to the people in my life. Then be grateful and enjoy that merry heart. It is a continuous feast, our Bibles tell us. But if you wish that you could redo or replay something in your life, any particular response, then you have the opportunity to both grow and to heal. God made us so that we can grow and that we can heal. And we got to be kind to ourselves in that process. Sometimes when we are afraid, when that amygdala gets activated and that reel starts playing, sometimes when we're afraid, it's actually just grief. The writer C.S. Lewis says, anger is the mask that grief wears. We talk a lot back to back about how behavior is the language of a child. And I think when I think about the way that we're acting, we're trying to say something. We're trying to say, this is what's happening inside of me. And if we're grieving and we can't find the words, our actions, our reactions will tell the story to the people that are around us. And if we can find a safe person, if we can close our eyes and go into that space with God where we know that you are loved and that you are important to him and that he sees you and that he wants to heal you. I think Jesus has always been a person who has comforted others. We have all kinds of examples in our gospel where he comforted someone who lost their child, someone who lost their brother. He wants to sit with us and talk to us about how those lies got in our gardens in the first place, who put them there. And then if it ever feels like one of those lies is too hard for you to pull yourself, he's strong enough to pull that out for you. And as those lies get replaced with biblical truth, then who and how you see yourself will grow stronger. And as you grow stronger, your attitude and actions will reflect what's happening inside of you. God, whatever your real is, whatever it has been, we can always grow and heal, and God wants us to be wise. Let's pray. Jesus, I'm so thankful we don't just get left with a gardening job of our own and we got to figure it all out by ourselves. I'm grateful that you care about those kinds of things, that you see where those lies and truths have come from, and you walk with us as we try to think through how we can be slow to anger and abounding in love. Lord Jesus, we love you. I pray that you're with us today as we interact with the people that we care about, as we interact with our neighbors or whomever it is that come in our path today, Lord Jesus. Be with us that we may look and sound like you. And I pray these things in your holy and precious name. Amen.